And joining us now is George Zongola, who is Professor of African and Afro-American Studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He's the former president of the African Studies Association. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Zongola.
Thank you.
And just on Sunday, the New York Times carried a story saying that the Congo has become one of the bloodiest conflicts since World War II, with more than 5 million dead. It seems incomprehensible that the biggest country in sub-Saharan Africa, and on paper one of the richest, teeming with copper, diamonds, and gold, vast farmlands of spectacular fertility, and enough hydropower to light up the continent, is now one of the poorest, most hopeless nations on Earth. Why so, George?
Well, basically because of, first, poor leadership in the Congo that we haven't had. A leader who enjoys legitimacy, who is democratically elected and supported by the people, and who can provide the kind of governance we need in terms of strong institutions like a national army that can do its job. Secondly, external intervention, first by the neighboring countries, primarily Rwanda and Uganda, but also because these two countries are supported from the outside, namely by the United States and the United Kingdom.
Well, of course, the United States during the 60s got rid of the democratically elected government in the Congo and brought in Zeki Mobutu, who was one of the world's greatest kleptocrats, was he not?
Yes, one of the most corrupt leaders who led the country for over 30 years, ruining everything and weakening the state and its institutions, yes.
So tell me about the various factions that are fighting in this civil war, who's backing them, and I guess at the end of the day, the DNA of so much of this has to do with who is getting these resources. I imagine things like coltan, which is necessary in all consumer electronic products, etc. So it's a murky mix, is it not, of economic motives, political manipulation, and there's a lot of people with blood on their hands, isn't there, George?
Yes. Well, the most important of the militia groups is the group calling itself the M23, or Movement of March 23. March 23 refers to March 23, 2009, when the government of Joseph Kabila, the current president of the Congo, signed an agreement of a group called the CNDP, the Congress, National Congress for Defense of the People. This is a group of Congolese Tutsi and Rwandan soldiers that were integrating the Congolese army, that were basically organized, trained, and armed by Rwanda to serve as the fifth column for Rwanda in the Congo. Their job is to facilitate access to Congolese resources by the government of Rwanda, which is exporting a lot of resources which Rwanda does not produce. And so today we see that the CNDP is no longer acting. We have a new group, the M23. This is a pattern that Rwanda has been using since 1996. This is the fourth group that Rwanda is using in order to destabilize Eastern Congo so they can have access to these resources.
Again, I'm speaking with George Zongola, who's a professor of African and Afro-American Studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and the former president of the African Studies Association and of the African Association of Political Science. His books include Revolution and Counter-Revolution in Africa and Nation Building and State Building in Africa. And George, Wednesday, the Armed Services Committee in the United States Senate are holding a hearing on the current situation in the Congo. Is there going to be anybody there present making the argument that you are making, which is that the United States is backing the very people who are destroying the Congo?
No, I looked at the people who are going to be testifying. I don't see anyone who can really make that argument. Fortunately, on the House side, the testimony of Mvembe Dizolele and Steve Higgy Tuesday of last week. These were extremely excellent testimonies, Mvembe being a Congolese and Steve Higgy being an American, but whose parents were missionaries in the Congo and who has been the coordinator of the UN group of experts. This is a group that has provided us with very credible information on the involvement of Rwanda in arming the M23, in arming these militia groups in eastern Congo. Unfortunately, on the Senate side, the announced hearing does not seem to be involving people who can really provide the kind of information that I'm providing you.
And are there any Congolese that are going to be testifying before the United States Senate on Wednesday?
No.
So what is the motive then? Why are the U.S. supporting the Rwandan regime of Paul Kagame and the Ugandan regime? And my understanding, a lot of this has to do with this Kony thing that happened on the YouTube, you know, this film made by these young American evangelicals that's affected U.S. policy. And in fact, I think is responsible for why the U.S. Special Forces are in that part of the world. Am I correct in that?
No, I would not use that as an argument. I think the matter is much more serious than that. What we're witnessing today is that instead of the Cold War with communism as enemy number one of the United States, today we have the so-called War on Terror with international terrorism as the number one enemy of the United States. And today Rwanda and Uganda are the U.S.'s best allies in the Great Lakes region of Africa in a war against terror. Rwanda is providing one of the major military contingents and the commander of the UN African Union force in Darfur, in Sudan, which is considered a country but is supporting Islamic terrorism. And Uganda is providing the most important unit of the African Union force in Somalia, helping to reestablish law and order in Somalia and fighting against the Al-Shabaab, the Somali militia group, which claims to be affiliated with Al-Qaeda. So this is why the United States is supporting these two countries as their best allies in the war against terror. Secondly, in the case of Rwanda, you have to remember the United States with this guilt complex. They have the guilt resulting from the fact that President Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright, who was then the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations in 1994, did nothing to stop the genocide in Rwanda. As a matter of fact, United States compelled the United Nations to reduce the number of troops in Rwanda rather than increasing them. So Clinton finally went in to pronounce his mea culpa. And of course, since then, Clinton has been a strong supporter of the Rwandan regime. And the people who worked for him, including Susan Rice, the current U.S. ambassador to the U.N., who then served the first as in the National Security Council at the time and later on became the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, have been strong supporters of Mr. Kagame, the Rwandan dictator.
Well, you've given us a very good picture of the geopolitical motives in the war on terror, of who the United States is supporting and what they're getting out of it in this quid pro quo, particularly in Somalia. But the point I was trying to make, George, is that my understanding is that Joseph Kony, this warlord, is being used in effect as an excuse in the so-called war on terror to insert U.S. forces into that theater.
Well, it could be, but, you know, 100 U.S. soldiers don't really...
That's true.
So, you know, I mean, he could be useful, but I'm giving you the more important...
Right. Reason. Let's focus then on why it is that the U.S. Basically, the U.S. doesn't want to do anything except to go along with Paul Kagame's agenda, and as long as he's in there in the Congo, we're going to have this civil war. Is that the problem, that we simply are not on the side? We're not an honest broker because we're not backing an honest broker. I mean, the UN has a huge force in there, comparatively speaking, I think up to 20,000 troops. What the hell are they doing to stop this?
they are completely useless. And you have to remember the United Nations in the Congo is led by an American diplomat, Roger Meece, a former U.S. ambassador to the Congo, a person who is a great supporter of Joseph Kabila, this useless young man who was put in power by Rwanda, Uganda, and Angola with support of their backers in Washington, London, and elsewhere. So the UN is there. They have a mandate of peacekeeping, including the protection of civilians. And yet civilians are being killed, women and girls raped on a daily basis, and nothing is being done. So we have a very legitimate reason to ask, why does the international community spend $1.5 billion a year in supporting this UN peacekeeping mission in the Congo when it is not doing the work it's supposed to be doing?
Well, surely the other question to ask George Zangola is, why are we blind to the fact that 5 million people are being killed, and we're backing people who are continuing the killing, and we have this fig leaf of a United Nations force in there that you say are absolutely useless? So somebody must be surely have told President Obama that millions of people are being killed, and women and are raped every day, and children are murdered, and this is going on a daily basis. And even if you argue that maybe assuming that we are backing the right side, the question remains is, the killing continues, so something has to be done.
Exactly. That is an excellent question. One that should be asked of the Obama administration. For example, the United States, through AFRICOM, the African command of the U.S. Army, has trained a battalion of Congolese soldiers. And this battalion supposedly trained for peacekeeping. And by peacekeeping, that means that they are not qualified to wage combat. And so when random troops invade the Congo, they cannot confront those troops to protect the Congolese people. So the question is, what is this peacekeeping all about? And so why is the United States so much interested in peace, proverbial peacekeeping, while real human beings are being killed, are being harassed, and are being raped, and natural rest of the Congo are being looted? So I think that these are some of the questions we American citizens have to raise in terms of the U.S. policy. Why are so many resources being looted when the real issue is the issue of human rights, the issue of protecting people, the issue of democracy, and the issue of peace?
Well, just in closing, George Zangola, we've heard about blood diamonds, and there's been an effort to shame Western consumers into being careful about what they purchase in terms of the origins. The same is true with cocoa. So why is it that we have coltan, which is used in most consumer electrics? You know, why don't we start a campaign that everybody that has an iPhone ought to be aware of the fact that they have blood on their hands because of these important rare earth minerals involved in electronics nowadays all come from the Congo, and the United States government is supporting a country that is both militarily occupying the Congo and prolonging the civil war, and is a conduit through which American business interests and Western business interests are extracting these minerals?
Yes, some non-government organizations have been making a campaign around blood minerals in the Congo. A group like the Enough Project, led by John Prendergast in Washington, student groups around the United States. But I think that all that is not sufficient. What is most important is two issues. First of all, militia groups. These resources are being produced, as I said, through forced labor and child labor under militia groups, which are using arms to compel people to get these resources and who oppress the populations in these mineral-rich areas. We have to destroy those militia groups. And the UN force in the Congo was called by African countries to come and deal with these so-called negative forces. If they're not doing that job, the UN should be given a mandate to help eradicate these militia groups. Secondly, the countries that are fueling this conflict are mostly Rwanda and Uganda. They have to be punished by international community. There is a law in the United States which was first introduced by Senator Obama and supported by Senator Hillary Clinton, now called the Obama Law, which states that countries interfering in Congolese affairs and looting Congolese resources are to be punished. Right now, little has been done to punish Rwanda and Uganda for their transgressions. So I think that if those two things are done, that would provide a opportunity for the Congolese to be able to organize themselves and create institutions that would deal with questions of law and order and protection of civilians in eastern Congo.
Well, Georges Zangola, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Georges Zangola, who is a professor of African and Afro-American Studies at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and the former president of the African Studies Association and of the African Association of Political Science. His books include Revolution and Counter-Revolution in Africa and Nation Building and State Building in Africa. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me and I'll answer your questions as best I can. The conversation continues at facebook.com/IanMastersMedia, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.